This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Today, we're talking about using art and creativity as a way to heal from the stresses of the COVID-19 pandemic. We're joined now by Yabi Tab. Yabi is an artist and the Creative Placemaking Fellow at the Harrison Center in Indianapolis. Thank you so much for joining us, Yabi. We really appreciate having you here today. I want to start off by asking you a little bit about your life as an artist. How long have you been an artist?
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I have been an artist my whole life, but I've been professionally an artist just for 4 years.
Mm-hmm. So, and what got you into art?
Well, I always loved to draw and paint and do literally anything I can to visually express myself since I was little. But then when I went to school at Indiana Wesleyan University, I was introduced to a major called Design for Social Impact, and it was merging visual arts and design and problem solving to like social problems, and which is something that really interested me. So yes, mm-hmm. That's how I got into it.
That's interesting. So using art to deal with social problems, we're kind of talking about something similar. So why is art, do you think, in your opinion, an effective way of healing or coping with stress or even, as you mentioned, social issues?
Yeah, for me, I think art allows me to question things that are happening around me, meaning that it helps me spend more time with the issue that I am either trying to solve or trying to process for myself. So usually whatever I do, I start with the question, why is this a problem and why and how can I solve it? So visually, just the tactile way of painting or drawing or printmaking is a way of just expressing all of those thoughts into a form that is releasing what I'm feeling inside.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell us about the research you did during the pandemic?
Yes. Yeah, so my thesis research was for my senior research, and it was about creating safe spaces for Black women working or attending at predominantly white institutions. And the reason I chose that topic was it was at a very difficult time in America. That was around last summer, as you know, a lot of the protests were happening, and I wanted to create a space where Black women can authentically process these things. So it was a combination of interviews and visually illustrating those conversations through printmaking. So I was able to create a gallery show, just a solo show that was held during Black History Month, and people were able to enter into a conversation as they listened to the audio recording of these women sharing about their experiences.
Mm-hmm. And when you went into this project, did you have some ideas that were challenged when you put it all together, or did it align with what you already thought?
It really did align with what I was already thinking, but I was really amazed and also pleased by how that space was safe for all of us as we were sharing things that we all experience. Mm-hmm. And like you said earlier, using art as a way of processing. So it really gave us a place to let out all of those things that, you know, it's not just about frustration and anger, but also like things that make us happy, things that mm-hmm. we love to do and talk about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what else did you find during this research? Was there anything surprising?
I think I learned a lot about myself through the process of how to share my work or observation with others boldly, even if it feels scary and intimidating. So the solo show at my school wasn't really required for me to do. There's a senior exhibit for everybody at the end of the year, but solo show is something that really I was just drawn to doing mm-hmm. just because of the time and how that space I felt was really necessary. So I learned to just sort of step into spaces that seem scary or that seem intimidating.
Right, right. I mean, I guess art sometimes requires you to be bold. And did you feel that after this project now you can do more things? Like, did this kind of sort of pave the way for you?
Yes, definitely. I knowing what I know now and like how to carry on conversations. When I did that research, I've never done an art form with audio recordings before. So mm-hmm. it was really interesting to see how hearing someone else's voice as an art form really opens up the experience to a whole different level. So when you hear that someone is going through an experience, then you can also relate to it. That mm-hmm. means that you're also creating that safe space and healing for your own self when you see that you're not going through this alone. So it really like allowed me to experiment with areas that I have not tried before.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I think it also shows just, you know, how important representation is, and to see yourselves in things that are being produced, even in the artistic realm. Do you feel mm-hmm. like the art that you create, you mentioned sort of like hearing other people's stories help. Do you feel like sometimes you're doing it for yourself as much as you're also doing it for the audience?
Yes, absolutely. I think just to relate to like what's been happening, you know, with the pandemic and everything, art really had allowed me to sort of slow down and spend time with my own thoughts and things that I'm processing. So when I think about visual arts, and I do printmaking, which means I, you know, carve on wood or metal and things like that, the actual tactile way of telling stories through visual art really allows me to spend time with the stories that I'm trying to tell, as well as just, you know, let out things, emotions that have been inside of me. Even if it doesn't feel like I'm processing things, but it's such a very meditative practice that at the end I leave feeling a little lighter than I went before I started.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you got to like kind of get in the zone and really focus on your work. I'm just curious for myself, like, is it hard if you're like really focused and then somebody comes and interrupts you? How are you able to do that work?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's like some aspect of it is like not really individual. So like when I don't mind being interrupted, like some of the more methodical works that I do, like it's nice to have people and noise in the background. But you're right. Sometimes when I'm like in the zone, especially when I like write and things like that, it's really hard to get back in the groove after you've been interrupted. But usually I like seeing people and noise around me.
Yeah. Well, if you have any questions or comments for the show, or if you've been involved with arts programming and want to share your experience, reach out to us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. So Gabby, like what was conducting this research like? I know we've kind of talked a little bit about it, but could you take us through how you put together the project, and then how maybe for our audience to visualize like what it looked like when it came together?
Yeah. So at first was sparked by the whole idea of having a space to process hard things, and particularly for Black women. So when I started the research, I read a lot of literature that was written by Black women to sort of understand a lot of the stereotypes, negative stereotypes that shape our experiences and how we navigate those spaces. So the things that I explored are the strong Black women narratives and the angry Black women, all of these things that really hinder our experience from to truly like step into our full self and belong into spaces. And after doing the, you know, literature review and all of these like actual, you know, research, the data that I collected was more of just stories. So like I interviewed several Black women at the school that I attended, both professors and students at that time, of like, how are we dealing with this such complicated and heavy thing? And how are our peers around us who are not Black students being an ally, or like sort of giving us a space to process that, which there was such a lack of space to do that in mm-hmm. institutions. So that's how it started. But then as I collected the stories, I was able to allow the whole student body to enter into those conversations as I played excerpts from the interviews into a speaker in the gallery accompanied with visual arts. So people were invited to step into that. And if they were interested into listening to the full conversation, they scanned a QR code that led them to the actual episode of the podcast. And for me, it was one, seeing ourselves represented in the art, in the area of art and higher education, especially where we don't see literature by Black authors as much, especially if you're attending, you know, a predominantly white institution. So for me, it was, you know, tackling all of those conversations about representation, things that make us angry and frustrated, as well as the joyful experience that we have as people. So it was like a merge of like just our experience and allowing other people to enter into that.
Mm-hmm. That's really, really cool. And I wonder, though, if it was like also an ability for the general population to come in and sort of put themselves in the shoes of these stories and be immersed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think after the show, a lot of Black people were really impacted by the fact that they also related to those stories, that was also their experience. Mm-hmm. And non-Black students and professors were also allowed to enter into that, like, oh, okay, this is how it is, and also sort of introspect and how they can be a part of creating that safe space for everyone that's around them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really powerful. We have about a minute left. I wanted to ask you about how people can use art to create a sense of community.
Yeah, that's a really good question. Art, I think, again, art is allowing us to see and to reflect about our experiences broadly, either personal experiences or communal experiences. So I think for me, I work at the Harrison Center. I'm a creative placemaking fellow. And the way I am creating community here is by working with community members to teach different art classes and things like that. So art doesn't have to be one thing. It doesn't have to be painting or drawing or illustration. It can be anything. It can be music. It can be, you know, poetry. But it can truly bring people together because we have such a shared experience. And through art, we can all tell our own stories.
I love that. Through art, we can all tell our own stories. Well, thank you so much, Yabi, for your time. Yabi Tab. Yabi is an artist and the Creative Placemaking Fellow at the Harrison Center in Indianapolis. After the break, we'll continue our conversation about the arts as a means of healing, especially during the pandemic, and learn about a community art group in Indianapolis. If you have any questions or comments for the show, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Sobel. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Before the break, we were talking about a research project related to art therapy during the pandemic. Now we're going to learn more about a community-based art group in Indiana and the work being done during the pandemic. And we'll continue our conversation about why art can be healing and powerful. We'd love your questions and comments on the topic. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, at 866-476-3881. You can also send us a voice message through our free smartphone app. It's called All In Vox Pop. Just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. Send us your question or comment, and we'll try to get it onto the show. We're joined now by Britt Sutton, president and CEO of ArtMix. Welcome, Britt. I want to start by asking you about ArtMix. How is it involved in sharing art and art education to the community in Indiana?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. It's kind of beautiful today. I'm trying to find a quiet space in a very loud, very busy studio, which we have not had in a long time. So I'm grateful for that. So ArtMix, we have been in the community in Indianapolis since 1982. We are primarily known for serving individuals with disabilities and providing art classes and art jobs for individuals with disabilities. So we've been an integral part of this community for over 30 years. We are very excited to be here. And while it's looked a little different over the past year, we are very much back in action right now.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of programming do you have at ArtMix that makes an impact on the students that you teach?
Sure. So we believe that disability should never keep someone from access to the arts. That's first and foremost why we were created. So one of the programs that we are known for nationally is called Urban Artisans. And it's a vocational program where students come into the studio and work collaboratively. Most of these students are between the ages of 15 and 22. They are paid fair wages, which is very important when you're talking about disability organizations. Mm-hmm. We are not an organization that pays 60 cents an hour. We are an organization that pays fair wages, at least minimum wage. And we teach students how to work together as a team and collaboratively become working artists. So that's one of our programs. Another program we are very known for are our community art classes. So we have a fee schedule based upon your income. We also offer scholarships if somebody is below the federal poverty line and in an area where they are not able to afford curriculum. We have scholarships too. And those classes are open to anyone and everyone. We have students in our classes from age 10 to age 65, and they love to work together. We offer classes in clay, painting, drawing, you name it. Like Yabi said, actually, I get to see Yabi quite frequently at the Harrison Center. We also do printmaking, music, dance. So our community classes are one of the cool offerings we have. And then kind of the last thing is we have an artist in residence program. So we can actually send one of our professional teaching artists who are trained in working with individuals with disabilities and finding creative adaptations for them. We can send them to you and to your program. And that's one of the cool things that we were able to do during the pandemic. We were able to build some new relationships with different community groups.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? You know, what things were like during the pandemic for ArtMix?
Oh, man. Well, I started as CEO in the middle of the pandemic, so that was quite a bit. That was an interesting jump in. I like to say drinking through a fire hydrant there. We had to totally pivot. So everything that we had done previously was in person, in studio. So we had to find ways to reach the population we serve, the community we serve, where they were. So our teaching artists are amazing humans. They jumped right in. We started a YouTube channel with free YouTube curriculum. We started this thing called Creative Collaboration, where we would put up an activity on social media once a week, and we would kind of provide instructions. And then we started handing out supply kits. So a lot of the population that we serve are individuals with disabilities. We've always been combating that traditional view of disability. And so one way we do that is through community building and team building. So we were able to continue that and continue that sense of togetherness by sending out supply kits to a lot of our students and anyone, frankly, who called and reached out and wanted an art supply kit. And we also handed them out at community events too, because we wanted people to be able to have a creative safe space for self-expression in their own home, because my goodness, everyone knows we needed it. So through YouTube, which we still have, and it's still free if anybody wants to watch, through the handing out and distribution of the supply kits and mailing of supply kits, and through some of our online initiatives, Zoom classes, and the creative collaboration, we were able to keep creating during that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the pandemic really challenged even creative people to be even more creative with all of these different venues and ways to do things. And that's really cool that you were able to provide supply kits and stuff. Is that something that you think you're going to continue, even though things are kind of sort of opening up?
Absolutely. Yeah, that is something we definitely want to continue. That's one of the initiatives that we kind of saw as a blessing in disguise during the pandemic. We saw there were more people reaching out for classes, and we have the ability to serve more people through providing Zoom curriculum and online curriculum. We were able to partner, interestingly enough, with some adult day facilities and some facilities that lost their, like, retirement homes, who lost their art providers because of the pandemic. We were able to partner with them and offer Zoom curriculum. And we had some organizations calling and saying, hey, we've been live streaming your YouTube videos for our residents. Can you send us some supplies? We kind of created this relationship of working together through that. That was kind of beautiful and symbiotic. And so that's something we will definitely be continuing even now.
Mm-hmm. Well, when it comes to making art as a way to cope with stress, why do you think it's, I guess, like a useful tool, especially when we were going through this pandemic?
Yeah, so it's funny you ask that, because we were talking about this as a group. You know, in disability world, we've got people who've been dealing with complex medical issues and using art as a method for healing for a very long time. So it was interesting to see during the pandemic, people dealing with not only medical issues, but dealing with mental health issues and dealing with anxiety and stress. Art is such a great tool for kind of using this, I don't know, meditative method of self-expression, if you will. I don't know about you, but sometimes I'm unable to articulate the way that I'm feeling, but I can get out a canvas and I can throw some paint on that canvas and I can kind of express how I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. And it's also just a really beautiful way of zoning out and finding a safe space for relaxation. So you can kind of forget the world for a second. You can forget the trauma. You can take a step back from all of these really heavy things that are going on and just focus on that piece of paper or that ball of clay in front of you. And I love mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like I need some clay to work with right now.
I was actually joking I might hold some while we were talking just because it is kind of meditative for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I just miss those days of art electives and all those things. It's like sometimes you have to grow up and leave the fun behind. But I know you can also keep the fun as an adult, and I can tell with all the programs that you have, which is really awesome. What are some of the things that ArtMix does for the community? I mean, I know you mentioned some of it. Is there anything else that we didn't touch on?
Yeah, so we have our Arts for All Fest every single year. And we like to say that Arts for All Fest is kind of a way in one day the community gets to see what we do every single day. So Arts for All Fest this year will be July 28th from noon to 6 p.m. at ArtMix, 1505 North Delaware. So we're inside the Harrison Center. And we will have 6 creation stations where individuals can come up. You can kind of experiment with different types of art, try out things, see what you like, what you don't like, and kind of just have a fun day of creating. We'll also have resource booths from some of our community partners. So we'll be working with disability service organizations, different like Gleaners is going to have a booth. I think Indie Pride is going to have a booth. So just different social service organizations as well, who we like to partner with and see as valued partners, will be there offering resources. But it's a really fun day. I would love if everyone listening would come out. You can sign up via our website. We do have an Eventbrite for registration. It's totally free. The Eventbrite is really just to kind of help us make sure that we don't have too many people coming in at one time. And it's also to help us if you have any specific accessibility needs. We want to make sure that we know that before you get there so you can have the best time possible when you arrive.
Nice. Well, when it comes to ArtMix in Indiana, how accessible are programs like ArtMix? Is there still more that needs to be done? Could you see this growing beyond Indianapolis?
Absolutely. So, you know, we always like to say we want to work ourselves out of a job. Eventually, we want every single art organization to be so accessible that places like ArtMix don't need to exist, right? Everyone can feel welcome everywhere. There are wonderful organizations like ArtMix across the country. We used to be a part of, and we are still considered an affiliate of VSA, which was originally founded by the Kennedy family. A lot of people know about Best Buddies and Special Olympics that they founded, but they also founded an artistic division that was called VSA. So we are considered a VSA affiliate. We are everywhere. We would love to have more hubs, right? We would love to have more connections across the state of Indiana. So if you have an organization and you would like to have an artist in residence come from ArtMix to teach at your organization, no matter where you are, Evansville, Terre Haute, wherever, give us a call, reach out. We would love to send teaching artists who are trained in this to people across the entire state.
Cool. Well, if you have any questions or comments, or if you've been involved with arts programming and want to share your experience, reach out to us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana, or leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. We're speaking with Britt Sutton, President and CEO of ArtMix. Britt, why do you think it's important to have programs like ArtMix in the grand scheme of things? I mean, I could see some people saying, well, there's plenty of different programs, you know, it doesn't really matter. There's so much art all over the place.
Yeah, you can see it, and they do. So one way we're different is we never turn anyone away. Constantly, I'll get phone calls where someone will say, you know, I want to take an arts class, but I have severe arthritis. I'm unable to use my hands. I have limited functioning. And I say, come on in. We will provide the tools for you to still be able to access art. And if we don't have a tool that currently exists for you, we will make one or we will find one. That's one of the things that we do and we specialize in. And we'd love to help our other friends who have art organizations do as well. So we'll have people from other art organizations across town contact us and say, hey, I have a student with this specific limitation. Do you know what type of tool I should use with them? Do you have experience with that? And we are always happy to help. Same with our teachers, K through 12. If you want to put some art into your classroom and you need help with adaptive tools, we will help you. And that's one of the big things that makes us different.
Well, speaking of arthritis, you've piqued my interest here. What would a special adaptation be if you, like, for example, you can't use your hands and it's too painful?
Yeah, so we actually have students or have had students in the past who had to use a mouth tool to paint because they didn't have functioning of their hands. So we have those available. We also look at different methods. So if you were able to do blow painting, right, that's something that we do. We have a student who works with her mother, actually, and creates these gorgeous blown works of art using alcohol ink that we put into greeting cards, and she sells in our art gallery that are stunning, and she's unable to use her hand. So that's just one example.
Wow, that's really, really interesting. And it's fascinating. And I love that there's a way to adapt for anyone that's wanting to get involved in art. And I guess, as you said, you don't turn anyone away. So do you have any sort of favorite stories that come to mind when you think about your time so far with ArtMix?
Oh my goodness. Well, I would have to say my most favorite is we just started our summer program June 1st, and summer is the busiest time of year here and traditionally always has been. We were unable to have the program in person last year, so we did the program via Zoom. So watching the students come in and meet each other in person for the first time was really beautiful, moved me to tears, and just makes everything worth it. Looking for funding, the spreadsheets, all of the type of stuff that I do on day to day. It's all worth it when you get to see them meet each other for the first time and create together in the same studio. And also reuniting with their teachers. Oh my gosh. I mean, we would get calls every single day. When can I come back? When can I come back to ArtMix? I miss Mr. David. I miss Christy. I miss my teachers. When can I come back? And so to finally get to welcome them back into the studio with open arms, socially distanced, of course, was incredibly beautiful and rewarding and quite possibly the best thing that I've seen in 2021.
Nice. And are you planning to continue with the art classes so far? Like how has the protocol changed for you?
Protocol changed quite a bit. We were very lucky to get some grants that helped us, but you know, we were used to having 20 to 30 students in a classroom. Now with social distancing, we're at 15. So we are capping our studios. We do have a waiting list for in-person classes. We have gorgeous plexiglass dividers. Quincy Owens of Owens and Crawley actually created our plexiglass divider. So we have even artistic plexiglass in there. We are still requiring masks too. Of course, we are 100% accessible. So if somebody has a doctor's note or a reason why they can't wear a mask and they need to wear a face shield, that's absolutely fine. But yeah, I would say the biggest is we do have a waiting list now because we can't get as many people in our studios as we would like to.
Well, before we wrap up here, I wanted to ask if you think there's anything that can be done or changed to promote more art groups to grow here in Indiana. Like, is there anything that can be done?
Yeah, I think so. I think funding is a huge issue. I mean, classic arts person saying that the arts aren't funded, right? But it is true. There's a limit to funding of arts organizations. So I think that if you are passionate about the arts, if you're passionate about disability, building a sense of community, togetherness, please donate to an arts organization. Please support your local artists. Buy local artwork. We have a gorgeous gallery here and the Harrison Center. We have a ton of fantastic artists. So buy art locally. I know people are tempted to do the TJ Maxx thing or the Etsy thing, but, you know, support your local artists first and foremost. And I think that just donating to arts organizations is one of the best things you can do. And if you can't donate financially, give of your time. We're always looking for volunteers. So please, please sign up to volunteer on our website. I promise you, if you come to ArtMix once, you're never going to want to leave. It's that kind of a positive atmosphere. So if you can't donate of your treasure, donate of your time and talents, and just support your local arts organizations and your local artists.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Britt Sutton, the president and CEO of ArtMix. We'll be back after a quick break when we shift the conversation to learn a little bit about art therapy. If you have any questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. And if you want to send us a voice message without making a call, you can use our smartphone app. It's called All in Vox Pop, free and easy to use. Just search for All in Vox Pop on your phone's app store. That's VOXPOP. I'm Miriam Soap. Back in 90 seconds, this is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Soap. We talked a little bit about community-based art groups and the reasons why art can be so effective with coping with stress and trauma, but now we're going to learn more about the practice of art therapy. As always, we'd love to hear your questions and comments. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. We're joined now by Michelle Waukee Thornburg, a licensed mental health counselor and registered art therapist at the Brain Center in Indianapolis. Welcome to the program, Michelle.
Thank you for having me, Miriam.
Well, let's start with art therapy. How long has this practice been around?
Goodness. Okay, so I like that question. Thank you. Because a lot of people don't really know the history of art therapy. It's been around for a long time. So around the 40s, right, came around. And when art therapy was first, when it first appeared as a form of psychotherapy, it was rooted in psychoanalysis. So think of Freud and Jung in that case. Mm-hmm. So the idea of the artwork or art expression is thought of as a reflection of the art maker's unconscious and was a natural fit with those central concepts of the psychoanalytic and Jungian theory. So it stresses the importance of the individual's internal world.
That's interesting, because I think sometimes when we think of art therapy, it sounds like some new thing that popped up like 10 years ago, but it's actually been around for a long time.
It's been around for a long time, yes. People have a tendency to confuse it with art class or, various other things. Mm-hmm. And in art therapy, we have this concept of isomorphism. It's not isolated to art therapy, but in terms of art therapy, when we think of how to describe the art product, it's an external representation of the internal state of the client, right? So it's like our inside, what's going on in our body and mind is coming out through the art.
And so are there different ways that that's expressed in art therapy?
Yes. So for instance, guiding a client through the therapeutic process, for example, if a person is struggling with control or maybe they're agitated, to help them become a little more centered and be more at ease, I wouldn't necessarily choose watercolor, right, as a medium, because it's the most fluid, it's unpredictable, hard to control. But what I may do is suggest something like oil pastels, because it's still fluid, but it's more restrictive than watercolor, and the client can still feel some sense of control.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's very fascinating. And I think it really helps to dispel some of these misconceptions where, I mean, myself included, where I'm just like, oh, art therapy, you just go to a therapist and they're like, here, draw something, you know? So it's very interesting to see that it's tailored specifically to whatever they're going through.
Well, think back to what Yabi and Britt said, you know, through art, actually, we can tell our own stories, our own experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So think of that in those terms as well. So we have, you know, we have art therapy and we have talk therapy, right? Mm-hmm. So art therapists are trained when to offer which types of materials, which art prompts to give, how to support the creative process as it's unfolding. You have different materials that interact with different parts of the brain. So there are many factors involved. So that's when you start to bring in that neuroscience, right? The element. Art therapists also bear witness and hold space for clients to create. Very similar to talk therapy in that sense, right? Mm-hmm. A mental health counselor is trained to utilize a variety of theoretical perspectives. Within those perspectives, tons and tons of theories. Mm-hmm. Intervention, also bearing witness and holding space. Very similar in that sense to talk therapy. The art therapist is combining theories of creativity, drawing development, psychosocial models, and probably actually more than that, by combining those with the major perspectives in psychology, right? The biology, psychodynamic, behavioral, cognitive, humanistic. You're taking those, and within that, those theories, art therapists, you're adding on more to that, we're utilizing the expressive therapies continuum, right? It's kind of our framework where, like I just explained, how to use a material in what context. This ETC, or expressive therapies continuum, it helps us with the organization of assessment information, formulation of treatment goals, and the planning of art therapy interventions.
Mm-hmm. Now, for someone who would be interested in this field, I'm just curious, like, would you have to be a skilled artist to be an art therapist?
Not necessarily. I have a BFA in sculpture, so I went to art school. I have a fine art degree. But a lot of art therapists I've met did not have that background, and it's not necessarily required, right? So if a client of art therapy does not need to have, it's not about the skill. Mm. Right? It has nothing to do with art skill. And in terms of the art therapist, as long as they're comfortable utilizing the art materials and understanding that process, going through that process themselves, it's not required that you're a fine artist.
Okay. And I know you gave us some example about how you could use art in a session. Are there any other sort of things that maybe people wouldn't realize is used in session?
Just about anything and everything can be used in terms of creativity. Now, when you're talking about assessments, right? Assessments in art therapy are very specific. We're utilizing a certain size of paper, certain media, maybe a pencil or colored pencils or markers. So some things are a little more strict in that sense, right? Because we have that spectrum of art as therapy versus art psychotherapy. So we're going to do more on that art psychotherapy realm. We're going to do a little more clinical work utilizing assessments. But we can also do things like art as therapy, which I do in my own life, but can be incorporated into session where you're using materials as a way of soothing and coping, right? So maybe say you take a paintbrush and you're just moving that paintbrush back and forth, right? You're just creating this self-soothing moment here. Or maybe you're taking some colored pencils and you're coloring within a circle. We call a mandala. We use that a lot in art therapy to help, you know, contain emotions. And so there's just a variety of things that can be done. All art therapists are so different. You know, just as art, the artist therapy and art psychotherapy is a big spectrum. Art therapists are there as well. Not all art therapists are licensed mental health counselors. So some art therapists have a master's in art therapy, and some have included that sort of hybrid degree, which I have, the licensed mental health counseling as well. So there's such a variety when it comes to, you know, what happens in the office with the clients.
So I would assume it's up to the client to sort of research and figure out which route they want to go.
In some ways, you know, we can also help just through assessment, just figuring out what it is the client is interested in. Mm-hmm. So essentially it's, you know, it is psychotherapy. We're utilizing all these theories in art therapy as a modality. Mm-hmm. To come to the similar to same conclusion as you would in talk therapy, right?
Right, right. And what about, I mean, you're with the Brain Center right now. What are some of the things that are done at the center?
So Dr. April Crowell is the owner of the Brain Center, and she's a clinical neuropsychologist. And so she offers full psychological testing. And we also offer therapy services, such as like my degree, right? The LMHC or in art therapy as well. So that's a combination of the two. And so there's an office in McCordsville, Indianapolis. And so it's growing. It's in the process of growing. So right now that's about what's going on there.
Mm-hmm. And what about, I'm curious about when we talk about accessibility, like earlier we were talking about accessibility to art programs like Art Mix. How is accessibility with art therapy? Are there enough art therapists? Is this publicized enough?
Oh, great question. I'm advertising it on the Brain Center website, right? And I'm also advertising a group for teenagers, art therapy group. So there are ways of advertising. Now, what's interesting is, so I'm a member of the American Art Therapy Association, right? Which is much larger, right? And then you have the local Indian Art Therapy Association. I'm also a member. Now, if you go on that website, you'll find an art therapist locator, but unfortunately you're only going to find a few art therapists. Now, I don't know why I don't know why this is, guys. So all the art therapists out there, please let's get on there and make sure that we're on the locator. It's something that you have to actually register for. As a member, I made the assumption, which we have a tendency to do make assumptions, is that we're automatically on it. We are not. So let's get out there and make sure that we're able to provide that. Now, some art therapists work in private practices, work for Riley Hospital, IU Health. It looks different all over the state. Now, at the Brain Center, we actually accept Medicaid, right, in addition to most major insurance for psychological testing and therapy, which is something people are normally surprised about. It allows for more access for individuals who may not be able to engage in services due to the cost. Now, in Indianapolis and surrounding cities, we have Indy Child Therapists. It's a private practice. They also provide art therapy. Sunstone Studios, Indiana Health Group. Martine Feist, she's an art therapist in town. She's great. In Bloomington, we have Linda Bannister. She's in Spencer Psychology. We have Greenwood Counseling Associates. Grow Counseling and Art Therapy. A friend of mine owns that, and that's in Plainfield. And so it's out there. It's not advertised as much as I personally would like it to be. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to have a little more information out there that's accessible to everyone that's interested in that practice and understanding it better.
Yeah. I mean, and you mentioned that at the Brain Center, they take Medicaid. And I'm curious, do most insurance plans cover art therapy?
No. So what's lovely about the Indiana chapter, Art Therapy Association, is, if you guys are interested, take a look at the website, because they're always working hard to change legislation, right? So as a licensed mental health counselor, I can bill for services, right? As an art therapist, I cannot. Mm-hmm. So there's a difference. It's not a license. Now they're working on it. They're working on it all the time. They're working on it. They work so hard on it to have that change for us so that art therapists can bill just like a licensed mental health counselor.
Yeah. And it's, again, I'm going to go back to the fact that art therapy has been around, you said, since the 40s, but for some reason it just seems so new when you're trying to get legislation going. It's like, wait, did this just happen?
You want to hear something more interesting is that during Pence's time as vice president, his wife, that was her platform. Karen Pence's platform was art therapy.
Oh, wow.
So, okay. And who is, how many people have heard that? So it's out there. It's just not talked about as much as we would like. Again, a lot of stigmas. And the more, things are changing. And so our field is more people are interested, right? I'm on this show talking about it right now. There's interest in it.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say to somebody that's interested in perhaps pursuing therapy and going in the art therapy route? What would you say if they're like hesitant, like I want to do it, but I'm not sure?
Well, as with anything, you know, you take that chance and try it out. Maybe look online and read a little bit about it. If you want to engage in something creative, to learn more about yourself, it's, you know, it's to really help increase and enhance self-awareness, right? Identify strengths, develop interpersonal skills. There's so much that can happen with it. So it's really the approach that works for you. Some clients I have are only talk therapy. They really prefer not to engage in that creative element. However, there are times when, you know, eventually they ask to engage in it. So it's really individualized. It's really up to the person in the way that they want to heal.
Mm-hmm. And what's next for you? I know you're with the Brain Center. Is there anything else you're working on?
Well, I'm always working on something new. I am in the earliest stages, if you can be, and, you know, starting my own practice. That's way in the future here. So that is something I'm working on. It's a lot of work that goes into that. I'm also working on getting more art therapy groups together. It's such a beautiful experience to engage in a group setting. Also working on my own art. When Yabi and Britt were talking earlier about, you know, engaging in art, right? And how, as a way of coping through the pandemic. So my husband and I, and our good friends, David, Yosha, and Dorothy Hinkle, what we did was, as a way of coping through that, was we engaged with the Arts Council for the March Madness, artwork for March Madness. So that downtown work, if you saw that. A lot of artwork printed on vinyl. We decided to do a collaboration, a three-dimensional collaboration installation called Multiverse. So we were able to experience, you know, making art in that context. It was therapeutic. It was cathartic. And so I'm interested in maybe doing a little bit more of that public work, as well as just what I do to cope, you know, just making little things here and there.
Yeah. And I wonder, did you see a lot of clients during the pandemic that were more interested in the artistic aspect?
Yes, very much so. You know, it's amazing with art therapy. There's just so much, you know, we could talk for days on this. Mm-hmm. But we think in images, and we thought in images before there were words, right? Before we spoke words. So it plays a large part in our development, and it's a way to communicate without really having to say the words. And it helps us find the words. So I did find at that, you know, during the pandemic, clients were more, you know, interested in engaging with materials. So being creative and engaging, the clients appear to be more open, revealing, and receptive during and after engaging in art making. So there is something there. And so that pandemic kind of pushed it a little more for everyone.
Right. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your insight. Michelle Waukee Thornburg is a licensed mental health counselor and registered art therapist at the Brain Center in Indianapolis. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Join us tomorrow for a show on the opioid epidemic and HIV Hep C outbreak that happened in Scott County in 2015. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Miriam Sobe. Thanks for listening. This is All In.